Welcome to Success Stories, brought to you by SNS Activewear. I'm your host, Marshall Atkinson, and this is the podcast that focuses on what's working so you can have success too. On today's Success Stories podcast, we'll talk to Ben Spurlock with Southeast Impressions in Lebanon, Tennessee, which is just outside of Nashville, about his shop. He's a second-generation t-shirt printer and has taken over the business from his parents. How has he taken his business to another level with increased sales, new processes, standards, and organization? We'll learn all about that and more. So buckle up and get ready for an amazing episode. Hey, Ben, welcome to the Success Stories podcast.
Hey, Marshall, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and if nobody has met you before, you've been in the industry a while, and you've got a trademark hat you're always wearing, but if they haven't met you before, kind of give us the lowdown about your shop and your customers and where you are and that type of stuff.
Well, we're located right outside of Nashville, about 20 miles east. Right now, we've got 4 automatics and 32 heads of embroidery running a DTF printer too. My parents saw a need back in 1996 for athletic apparel and stuff like that around Lebanon. And so they decided to start screen printing and embroidery, mainly focus on athletic apparel back in those days.
Right. And so you're just like the kid that worked in the shop.
I was one of those kids getting paid 50 cents a screen to come in when I was 12 years old and wash screens and do all the stuff nobody wanted to do. Thankfully, the chemicals came a long way, because I remember back then you had to wear the full-on suit or you get burned.
And so now, what is your role with the company? Because your parents are kind of like, they've kind of transitioned out a little bit and you're kind of running the show. So what are you doing?
So once I bought them out in September of 2020, when they were retiring, I was running production and screen print full on. We had somebody running embroidery production, but I was production manager over screen print. And as time has went on, I slowly have handed that off to now I'm very little involved to screen print day-to-day operations. I'm a little more hands-on in the DTF room, but I'm trying to hand off as much as I can.
And you guys are on 2 shifts, right?
Correct. We've been running a night shift for about, say, going on 2 years in December. And we've just now bumped it up to, we've got 2 full automatics running from 6 o'clock till 2 in the morning.
And how has that added more capacity to you guys? How are you taking advantage of that?
Well, luckily, we ran into a great screen printer, and he kind of took the role of, hey, I'm going to take over night shift. I want to grow this for you. And his goal was to keep adding people. The headache has been working with production to make sure we left them enough at night, making sure they were set up to succeed at night. And to be honest, our production manager's done a great job of doing that as well and setting them up to succeed and them to get along. But there's nothing like coming in the next morning and 15 to 25 jobs you need out for the day are done, ready to ship out.
I've done night shift over the years, right? And we always ran the really long jobs at night. And we did a lot of changeover jobs during the day because we might need somebody to approve it or a sample or whatever. Are you doing it the same way?
We try to give them the longer runs if we have some. And probably same thing for you. You know, there's no questions when you have one art that they're setting up and running all night. Our average run size is probably around 100 pieces. So we don't have a just ton of, here's 20,000 prints, go. But we do. When we do, we try to leave those for them at night.
Mm-hmm. And I know one of the challenges was always the day shift or the night shift would leave the work area, you know, not the same way that the other team wanted it, you know, whether that was how they set it up or they didn't clean up after themselves or whatever. How are you handling that type of thing?
We haven't seen it as much. You know, every printer does something different. You know, we have a guy who loves to raise every head and on a 6-head machine or an 8-head machine, even that, you don't have to lift the head to get the screen out. So there's been some adjustment. And, you know, it's kind of, you go back, leave it just as good or better than you found it, because they don't want to walk into a situation where it's dirty or it's not set up for them to work. And also we had a problem with squeegees, you know, just throwing them. And I got a M&R squeegee washer that now people fight over who's going to wash squeegees. So day shift throws 12 in and 12 flood bars before they leave. They start it. And then night shift does the same. They fill it up. So just working around, finding ways to let them get along has been an adjustment, but we figured it out.
That's great. And so how are you scheduling your jobs to those presses? You're doing everything in advance, so you know several days in advance what equipment and what shift is printing some, you know, these 20 jobs or whatever. They need, you know, exactly where everything's going.
Yeah. So that's part of the daytime production manager. She plans it out. In an ideal world, we're 4 and 5 days ahead. You know, just as much as me that when it gets busy, doesn't always happen. And, you know, if there's jobs that had to go tomorrow, you know, night shift could run them tonight and we just pray there's no mistakes. But as long as we're ahead, you know, we can divvy up those jobs as needed. One thing we've kind of started doing is our biggest press is 10 colors. So we don't do a lot of high color jobs. But instead of that day shift guy just getting stuck there doing 8 color after 8 color after 8 color all day long, we've started giving some of those to the nighttime people. That way he don't get frustrated just sitting up 8 colors all day.
And are you training your crew so you can redeploy and move people around just so people are learning and training and people can, you know, there's not a drop off when you get sick or somebody goes on vacation?
Yeah. So the production manager, there's a girl that helps right under her, and she was actually out last week. And, you know, I didn't go back there maybe twice the whole week. And that's kind of what I wanted to set up. I love having 2 press operators on each machine. I know you can't always have that way. But if you've got that and somebody's out sick, you're not down a press. You just slide one over. And the same thing goes with night. They've got 5 people that they rotate who's loading, who's pulling, who's doing what. And we've got a full-time catcher down there. But the other ones are basically can bounce around. And when people are out, we don't seem to miss a beat.
And is that like detailed, like you're scheduling like at a grocery store, I guess, or whatever, like who's doing what each week and you can, there's a chart?
We have the main press operators that they run their machine. If they're there, they're running the machine. You know, we've got a chart of who's out for the week. And that way, you know, we can look two weeks ahead and say, hey, Isaiah's going to be out this week and Derek's going to run his press and we haven't taken care of in advance.
Okay, good. All right. So let's talk about sales, right? So that's the lifeblood of any business. So who are your key clients and what have you done to attract more quality customers over the years? Talk about maybe how your parents did it and, you know, and juxtapose that to how you do it.
So like I said earlier, my parents really focus on athletic sales. They wanted to do teams. They wanted to do athletic merch. And to me, you're setting up the same amount of screens to do 12 pieces or 1,000 pieces, even if you're doing a little league jersey. And then back then, we would screen print the numbers still. We'd use stencils. And to me, I just felt like we were killing time. There was so much more we can do. And we started looking more and more towards the corporate world. And when we started going that way, we've grown by word of mouth. And since probably 2012, we were growing 25 to 30% a year. And we still don't have an outside sales team. We've got 4 girls that work up front that are kind of inside sales. But most of ours has been word of mouth growth and basically growth internally.
Mm-hmm. And so when you started going in another direction, what did your parents think?
They weren't opposed to it much. You know, mom was active in embroidery and dad was the finance guy. So as long as his numbers on paper looked good, he didn't mind. But I remember when I first got there, if we got 5 jobs done for the day, we could go home. And I looked at his board and I said, that won't work. At that time, we had 2 manual presses. I said, what if those 5 jobs are both all 5,000 piece orders? I said, there's no way we can get done with them. And so from then on, that changed that outlook for him. But I think once they saw how accident prone athletics can be, you know, we still run into it. We do a league and little Johnny don't know what size little Johnny wears. And so you're redoing a jersey for him. Corporate world, it's a little different.
Yeah, little Johnny's eating too much ice cream.
Yes, you can't tell little Johnny's mom that anymore because she'll take offense to that.
Yeah, we all have those Karens in our life, don't we?
Yes, some days more than others.
So don't you have a sales team, and isn't that what your wife was doing, right? Like, kind of walk us through that a little bit.
Well, she kind of does everything now. That's what happens when you marry into it. But she was doing a lot of the contract work. So we're about 30% contract customers, and we like to stay under that 30%. We don't want to become a fully contract shop, and we don't want to absolutely kick it to the curb, but we found that 30% has kind of been our sweet spot. But yeah, she's handled that. And since when she got pregnant, we hired somebody to take some of that off of her. And so luckily the past 6 weeks have went smooth without her. I don't know if that hurt her feelings or not.
Well, you know, here's the thing is you always need to train your replacement.
Yes.
Especially if you want to move up or do other things or do things that we don't even know that we need that right now. But if you are locked in on something, there's no way that you're going to be released to do the new thing because everybody needs you doing the other thing.
Yeah. And that was kind of one of my things too. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still first one there every morning, but I wanted to make sure that, you know, we had a little bit of freedom and didn't have to be married to the company. As I say, you know, I used to only schedule my vacations around 3-day weekends. So Labor Day or something like that. And we take the Friday off and have a 3-day weekend. But I wanted to make sure there's people there to do her job. There's still some stuff that only I do, but it doesn't have to be done every day, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So getting the jobs out the door efficiently and at a lower cost, you know, that always requires a mindset of focus on standards and process and organization. So what do you guys do? How do you guys think about this?
When I was on the production end, I'm like a time management freak. I like will be driving in my car and I'll calculate the fastest way to go places across town. And I'll go that route every time. Like, that's just how my mind was. And when I was back there, the goal was, how much can we get in a day? How much can get out the door in a day? And then once you figure that out, you start saying, how can I speed up these presses? How can I give the people what they need to make them be able to sit there and run a machine all day? Because that's the goal. When we're tearing down, when you're looking for screens, all that wasted time is t-shirts that could be going out the door. So we've started looking at, hey, where are these printers wasting time? Where's their downtime? And, you know, we even sent them home with a survey a couple months ago. And, you know, the production manager looked at where we're wasting time and said, hey, how can we fix this? So we found people to do what they were wasting a lot of time. And that way they can just stand at the press and go.
And are you doing what I call the scavenger hunt? Like, we pull all the jobs for tomorrow, today, all the shirts and screens and inks and samples and whatever we need. And we prioritize those at the equipment in the order they need to run in. Are you doing that?
So yeah, each day, I mean, we've got a lady who's dedicated her jobs to stack out shirts all day long. We've got a lady whose job's dedicated to taping the screens and get them to the press. So in an ideal world, they have their screens for tomorrow or early in the morning right now, and we'll feed them jobs as the day goes on. If there's stuff that comes in that needs to get rushed out, you know, the lady stacks them out and we can push it in front of another cart if need be.
Like what you hear so far? Be sure to subscribe so you can get the latest from Success Stories. And now, here's Devin Freet with the SNS Spotlight.
Learning more about trends, eye-catching decoration techniques, and unique apparel styles is the key to adding more value to your clients' orders. On our YouTube series, Decoration Myths, we're teaching you all that and more. By taking on challenging placements, products, and misconceptions about decorating, we'll show you that those hurdles are just opportunities to deliver something elevated and unique to your clients. So, if you're having trouble on the press or looking for some decoration inspiration, check out Decoration Myths on the SNS Activewear YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.
How are you dealing when the ink isn't mixed right or you pop a screen or whatever? I mean, like, one of the things I always have in the back of my mind is I can get I'll throw a one color in there while we're reburning the screen, and that way we're still moving forward. Are you guys doing tricks like that?
Yeah. So there's one machine that, I mean, his job's to do one and two colors all day long. They're the workhorse machine that just get it out the door. And if they have a screen pop or something, we pull one from his stack and give it to a press while they're waiting on a screen to get burned or whatnot.
Well, that's cool. And what system are you guys using?
We use Printavo.
Are you using a power scheduler?
We have not. We looked at it and we tried, you know, what we were doing worked. And so she didn't ever get into the power scheduler. We've played with it a couple times, but never just dead set, hey, we're going to this.
And are you keeping track of your KPIs, you know, setup times and run times and all that stuff?
So about probably a month ago, I had a big shop that's around us come in the door. We had a talk, showed them around the shop, showed them DTF. They don't do that. And we really started measuring performances. And we've started doing that as of, I think we're going on week three or something. I know last time we had a conversation, I wasn't doing that, but things have changed since then.
And how are you doing that? Just with a piece of paper, using an app? What are you doing?
Right now we're using a piece of paper. And the goal is to get a Google spreadsheet that everybody shared, and we're not writing it on paper and putting it in. But what we wanted to do is find a number goal of screens a day or prints a day that basically we're looking to get towards. And so right now we're just collecting data to kind of figure out what those standards and measurements are for us.
And you know your averages right now, like just so far, what are you hitting?
I mean, one guy averaged 2,800 prints for the days with, I think he had 34 screens. And then the guy who does 8 colors, I was shocked at this. He was averaging like 1,600 for the week on 52 screens a day. And I expected those numbers to be much different. But the shop I talked to ran one man at each automatic, and they had a catcher. And, you know, they were looking for 700 prints a day.
Not a big fan of that, Ben.
Well, you know, the guy was much smarter than me, and he runs a very successful business. And I asked the reason for it, because in my opinion, a puller and a loader can get more than 2 times the work done as a single man. And, you know, we're kind of seeing that, you know, they wanted 700 prints a day, and we're averaging, you know, close to 2,400 on some machines, yes, which is 3.5 times what they're doing. Yes.
Yeah, the stuff that I've done, the studies I've done, you know, a decent auto, if you've got a really good team, of course, it all depends on the print stroke, vertically, how long that print stroke is, because that's going to dictate the time it takes to print, right? But you really should be around 400 to maybe 500 impressions an hour. And then your the setup time that I like to see is under 5 minutes of screen setting up. Yep. And then maybe 7 to 10 minutes transition after the job, taking it down and putting the next one up, right? Yeah. And then if you know those times, and the reason why this is important is because then, okay, it makes your scheduling so much easier. Because if you know your averages, then you can go, well, here's what we normally do a day. And you can start looking ahead a couple of weeks and schedule jobs and go, okay, well, Thursday's full. You know, the soonest we can start working on that is Friday or whatever. And then that helps you with your customer relations and stuff, because you're doing what you say you're going to do much, much better. Right.
Right. And I think that's been one adjustment that the production manager I have has never printed. She slowly started printing when she has to, but I wanted to let her figure out how long this 5-color takes, how long the setup takes, and let her kind of figure that out. And, you know, she'd be like, hey, I've got 2,500 pieces, 8-color front and back due out tomorrow. Well, you're in trouble, because that's going to be hard for him to do.
Yeah.
Unless it's a tiny left chest, and she's done great. And to be honest, I never knew how production manager that didn't really print would work. But I mean, her job is to sit there and set them up for success and get jobs out the door. And she does a great job at it.
Well, let me tell you, a good chunk of the time, the easiest thing a shop does is the actual printing. Everything else is the difficult part, is
right,
getting the shirts in and getting the screens made and getting the art approved and getting people trained and keeping the shop clean. And like, there's a gigantic list of stuff. If you think about it, actually just printing the shirt is the easy part.
Right. But don't tell printers that, because most of them think production managers don't do nothing. You know that.
Yes, I'm quite aware of that. Right. Okay. And so you mentioned DTF a minute ago, right? So, you know, kind of how do you see this running your shop and how the industry is kind of moving there, right? And I know you've got some stories, for example, so let's kind of share that a little bit.
Yeah, we started doing DTF probably, 2.5 years ago. And I really, I didn't know much about it. I hated DTG, and I watched the video and said, that is really cool, and I bought a machine. We had no plan on how to use it. At the time, we were just going to run one-offs, and you know, when you get the 5T that has five colors on the front instead of burning five more screens, that's what we're going to do to it. Quickly, I upgraded to a quicker and faster machine, and we have slowly started moving more and more stuff in there. I really thought it would pull a lot from our screen print department. The embroidery department has had more pull from than screen print. A lot of polyester polos, polyester quarter zips. It just feels better. You don't get the pucker. You don't have to worry about it. And they feel great. So the local soccer team, you know, was one of the first DTF customers we switched over from embroidery, and they won't send us anything but DTF. They don't want to embroider anything anymore. We're finally starting to see some people say, hey, I want that transfer thing instead of, you know, screen print the order, even when it's an order that can be screen printed.
And a lot of people think that transfer word is kind of has a negative connotation to it. So I know that some people have been referring to it as a digital heat applied technology, yeah. Right? Which just sounds cooler.
Yeah, and you're right, because when you say transfer, immediately people think of vinyl. And nothing against vinyl, but the washability of digital transfers is great. You know, we've got a shirt that I've washed 80 times and I finally quit washing it, and it's just a solid block, no cracking and no fading. So what it's also allowed us to do is I think it's going to change the live printing game as well. You don't have to take equipment out to places that you need nothing but a heat press. And you can take different designs on site with some blank t-shirts and give people the same experience as if you were printing a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. We did an event a couple weekends ago, and there was 5,000 people, and we sold 1,200 shirts. So 1 in 5 people were buying it, and what they thought was, that is so cool to watch you do that. Mm-hmm. And if you're not around it all day, you're like, now, there's not really anything about heat pressing a t-shirt, but they loved watching their shirt get decorated. And yeah, we just let them pick their design and decorate the shirt, and we did it right there for them.
Mm-hmm. And so talk about, you've done some stuff at the State Fair and for John Deere, you know, give us those stories.
So that's the event we were at was the John Deere Classic. It comes around every 2 years. And they were coming to Lebanon, and they didn't have a vendor and said, hey, do you want to come do t-shirts? The guy last time sold out in 3 hours. And I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, it's one of those, you don't ever believe that when they say it. And that was the one I ordered 500 shirts on for a Thursday. And by 1 o'clock that Thursday, I was calling our lady who orders and said, hey, get me 1,000 more. We're not going to make it all weekend.
Right.
And so what happened there is that was at our state fairgrounds, and the state fair saw it and was like, hey, I reached out and said, hey guys, let me come do this for y'all. And you know, I don't want to have to pay for a booth. I said, and I'll give you a percentage of the sales when I'm done. And they said, so what do you need from us? I said, nothing. Let me do what I do and I'll cut y'all a check. And so our state fair is in the end of August, which it used to be our county fair. Now it's the Tennessee State Wilson County Fair. Mm-hmm. And about 900,000 people come through it in 10 days. So we're excited to see what it can do. We have no clue what we're going to do there, but it should be a good 10 days if we can survive.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. We need it.
So have you gotten into doing online stores?
We do online merch stores through Printavo for schools and companies if they want that.
Mm-hmm. And have you, are you actively selling that and trying to grow it? Because I know there's a big push for that right now because it really makes that customer sticky to you.
Yeah, to be honest, we don't push it as much as we should. If somebody comes in and they want a merch store, then we open it, you know. But I heard a guy today that was in the shop and said, "Hey, I want my employees to be able to go do this and this." And we're like, "Okay, perfect." Schools, it's great for too. You know, one thing we started during COVID that we kind of hadn't let go of is we ship out every order to schools. And I would tell every shop out there, if you're doing a merch store, ship them out, because everybody knows schools are the worst, that they're missing a shirt. This way, that every shirt was accounted for and shipped out.
Right. Well, the secret to that, you know, is, polybagging the shirts with the kid's name on it. And in that box goes to Mrs. Johnson's homeroom with a packing slip with all the kids' names on it that are in the box, and just having more processes. And of course the cost of all that is built into the pricing. So you do it right. But that prevents them from saying, "Hey, we're missing a medium." And it's because everything's in there and it's all detailed. Because if it's not, if it's just a box of shirts, when it gets to the school, all it takes is for them to open the box and reach in and take out a shirt and then walk off, and nobody knew that happened, and they're going to blame you.
Yeah. Well, and then it goes back to that. At the end of the day, what do you do when you do all that? And then they say, "I'm still missing one medium." That's when you DTF it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. All day. Right. All right, Ben. Well, hey, thank you so much for sharing your story of success with us today. What's the best way to contact you if someone wants to learn more about what you do, or maybe how you can help them?
They can email me at bspurlock@southeastimpressions.com, or just jump on our website and find the phone number and give me a call. I'm always there.
All right, man. All right. And thank you so much. It was great talking with you, and we'll catch you later.
Sounds good. Thank you, Marshall.
All righty.
Well, that's our show today. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe so you can stay up to date on the latest Success Stories episodes. Have any suggestions for future guests or topics? Send them my way at marshall@marshallatkinson.com, and we'll see you next time.